Let's get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council work session meeting of November 19th, 2024. Our first item is a presentation of the Boulder Way Forward, and I'll turn it over to Lisa Baskin.
It's such a pleasure for me to be able to introduce you to this mission of a Boulder Way Forward and its leader, Dr. Susan Matson, and she's really considered one of the top global scholars on this topic of women's leadership, and I'm going off of what has been written about her because it's so great. She's authored or edited 9 books, has published hundreds of articles, chapters, and reports. Her research has been cited in the U.S. News and World Report, The Atlantic, The New York Times, Parenting Magazine, Chronicle of Higher Education, and The Washington Post. She's also a regular, contributor to Forbes and other local and state newspapers. And then, of course, she's affiliated with Utah State, so that's even better. Professor Matson is the Karen Haight Huntsman Endowed Professor of Leadership in the John M. Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University and serves on many nonprofit and community boards. She's the founding director of Utah Women and Leadership Project, the visionary behind Utah's A Boulder Way Forward, and her passion is to strengthen the impact of girls and women in Utah and worldwide. I've known Susan probably 15 years now. We were on an organization called Real Women Run at the time. It's now changed its name to Utah Women Run. But I've attended trainings of hers before she has fully embraced this mission, and I can't say anything better about this person, but that she's my friend and she's a true leader. And so it's a pleasure to have Susan Matson come speak with us.
Thanks for having me today. It's so good to see all of you. And I'm a person that looks at eyes. I know you're eating, but I appreciate some time to tell you about A Boulder Way Forward. But before I get into A Boulder Way Forward, I'll get the slide up. I just have 8 slides counting this. I want to give you just a little background on Utah as it relates to girls and women. I love being a woman. I love living in Utah, and there are awesome things about living in Utah. We love the culture, and there's a few areas that women really shine in the state of Utah. Of course, our volunteerism, we're 12th state in terms of physical fitness. We've got a few things, but many people in the state do not realize the struggles and challenges that women and girls have in this state, and that are very unique. And I need to just tell you that I actually have 3 grandsons and 3 sons and 6 brothers. And I worry about my sons and my grandsons as well. But when you look at lives and the difference in raising girls and boys and the difference in experiences between men and women, some things will cover us all, but there are elements that we need to address separately because they are really different. And let me give you a few stats before I get into the Boulder Way Forward. We are ranked as 10 years in a row by Wallet Hub as the worst state for women's equality. There's 17 metrics there. Some people... Yeah. Some people kind of dismiss that. But we are the 6th worst state in terms of rape and sexual assault. We are above the national average in terms of domestic violence. 1 in 6 in terms of rape, 1 in 6 women have been or will be raped in this state, which is above the national average, as I mentioned. 1 in 7 kids, the estimate is, will experience sexual assault in this state, which is above the national average as well. And there's a lot of things I could give you background on all of that, but just know that there are some things that are amiss. We are ranked as the widest gap in the nation for the pay gap as well. We are 49th of 50 in terms of women in depression. We are 49th of 50 in terms of women's preventative health care. I want you to think about this. We are one of the worst states, the bottom three, on women getting their mammographies. I could go on and on. We have so many reports, and we think, what is going on? And so we have lots of reports on every issue that I've mentioned to help raise awareness. Because if women are not healthy, if girls are being raised, and many of them are really worried about, you know, or suffer. I talked to two male legislators in the last 2 months that have had, in the last year, their daughters raped. And one had his wife in the last year seriously sexually assaulted, not raped. But every time I bring it up, it's over and over. And a lot of people just don't see that there are things that we need to change in this state. We need to embrace what's good, but we need to change. And I don't ascribe to the scarcity mentality. And that is, if we lift and do things for some people, that it takes the rest of us down. I subscribe to the abundance mentality, that we can lift and be lifted. So that's what this work is all about. So don't mean to depress us all, but just to say we need to do some work. So as I mentioned, national and statewide studies continue to show that girls and women in Utah are not thriving in critical areas. As I mentioned, we have these high levels of violence and also gender-based discrimination, while also ranking us worst state for women's equality. And we have low levels compared to other states of women's leadership representation in nearly all domains. And there's definitely a connection there with policies and other things related. Now, although the needle has moved slightly, and I should say ever so slightly, in a few areas, and just a little pause here, I'm a global scholar, and I've actually done work in past years and decades at the United Nations, where I've been in scholar groups where we look at the trajectory. And for the first time, really, in the fall of 2022, I took this research and I said, okay, let's look at trajectory in Utah based on all of the research. How long would it take us to really get things, you know, moving in the direction that we need to? And it came back that really, to make notable progress, it's 3 to 4 decades. And I'll tell you, I have 6 grandkids, and I have 2 twin grandkids. One of them, Savannah. She's just 1, and she's walking. And as I think about her, I think about 30 to 40 years is not acceptable to get our violence rates down. It's not acceptable to make Utah, you know, to wait that long till she's 30 or 40 years to get things happening. We need to do so now. And so I say it's time for Utah to embrace a bolder way forward, because when we lift girls and women, we actually lift families. And sometimes people think, well, if we empower women or whatever, then that takes away from families. Actually, it doesn't. If we empower women and men and girls and boys, we can have stronger families. And so if we're serious about ensuring that more girls and women thrive in your city, in the state, we need to change, make change. Don't you agree? 3 to 4 decades is too long. We need to do it faster. And so really, we launched a bolder way forward in 2023 with a goal of 7 years. So let's, instead of 3 to 4 decades, let's do something unique that no other state has ever done. And we're coming from the bottom in a lot of areas, so we have lots of room for growth. And let's create this change in 7 years. So we're already at 6-year mark. With the so 2030 is what we're looking at and what we're moving towards, with a checkpoint in 2026. And this really includes change from just outputs, like what we're doing, to outcomes. let's actually, and believe me, it's been hard to find metrics to measure all of these things, but let's look at actually getting violence down. Let's actually do things that, instead of just doing more programs, be really strategic. And I was, late 2022, I was really, and I'm a scholar of women's leadership, but also a scholar of societal change. So I've written, I've researched on that, so I'm approaching this not just from a scholar researcher, but from someone that understands change. And I have lots of models, but a couple years ago, it's been 2 years now since this really came to me, I read this book, and it was two flights to Costa Rica and two flights back, and it really inspired me to think about, because at that point I was like, okay, I've been working for 20 years and the needle's not moving much. So do I keep doing that, or I'm at the age, do I spend more time in Hawaii? You know, I mean, let's figure out what we want to do. And so this really reminded me of my doctoral book, or doctoral work, How Change Happens, Why Some Social Movements Succeed While Others Don't. And this really looked at really successful change movements like Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and we all might remember when a lot of more people used to smoke, and the smoking has gone down, and other kinds of things. And then compared them with movements that, even if they had a lot of money, they just didn't catch on. So what is the difference? And a whole book in a slide or two, here we go. So it really is going back to systems thinking. So the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And systems are made up of interrelated parts, but you can't just look at the pieces and parts and understand the system. It's the relationship between the parts. Now, I have to say that in Utah, we are really great at pieces and parts. We have a lot of stuff happening. I say almost every day, it's not about doing more stuff. It's about doing the right stuff, being more strategic. So, really, this movement is around systems thinking. It's not starting from scratch, but there are pieces and parts. There are things missing, too. There's gaps in there. But it's bringing, partnering, being really connected, this networked leadership that is really the key. Now, when I landed back in Salt Lake after reading this book, we all get our inspiration in different ways. I happen to be a religious person, but I had some good flow going on that plane. And by the time I landed, my journal was full of stuff, and Boulder Way Forward felt like the term that we wanted to use here in Utah. It took me about a month and talking to about 100 people till I decided I'm going to lean in lead. I'm situated with my knowledge and experience and so forth to be able to motivate and lead such a movement. And instead of just doing one thing, like Mothers Against Drunk Driving, I'm like, what do you choose? Which one do you choose? And there's a lot of people doing a lot of things. So the model is really taking on, and I brought some extra copies of this. If you want to pass those so you can look at that more in depth, is to shift together in 7 years a movement called the Boulder Way Forward, Helping More Utah Girls and Women Thrive. And all of these areas connect with each other. If you know much about domestic violence and finance are linked, right? Domestic violence and finance and higher education and all kinds of things are linked together. And so what we have done is to establish, and we call this a will of change, the uphill road, the programs, efforts, and initiatives that have been going on have helped make the road smoother. But our model, and I had this on the airplane when I came back, and I thought we would have a better metaphor, but the wheel has stuck. We're going to move the wheel up the hill. So we have 5 categories, and you can see we call these 18 spokes. And so let me just health across the lifespan. That one is being headed by Intermountain Health and University of Utah Health and Regents Blue Cross Blue Shields. It's all over the place and lots of others. They have brought in, that's our biggest one. And so we're not starting from scratch. We're bringing the people and they're bringing the people in. Child sexual abuse. Supriya, are you familiar with Supriya? Maloof Foundation, Prevent Child Abuse Utah, the whole system in state government of the Children's Justice Centers. Those are the four spoke leaders and spoke organizations. They've never all worked together. And so this is an opportunity to really help them work together. And I won't go through all of them, but you can see workplace things, education, home and family, of course. So this is not all about women in the workforce or whatever. It's about home and family. It's about strengthening all of that. And so right now, we started this and launched it June of last year. We have 18 spokes. Overall, I have about 250 leaders in the Boulder Way Forward and about 4,000 people engaged now. And in fact, we have on the rims, we call them, all the names are not there, we have 12 impact teams. Things that go, you know, permeate across all 18 areas. Things like race and ethnicity. We have one on veterans. We have sexism. Lisa's involved in that. We have male allyship. This is not all about just women jumping in. We have a lot of men that are like, I want this place better for my daughters. And this rate of abuse is unacceptable. So more and more men are being pulled in there. We have women's history. We have a lot, LGBTQ, all of the refugees, immigrants. I mean, there's a lot of different things. And then one thing that you'll be impressed, it's taken us a year, but we now have county coalitions in 29 counties in the state of Utah. And so every county, including Davis County, has a coalition with leaders. I think there are four leaders, and then coalitions that are coming together with resources to raise awareness, to start working. And it will get in the next year down to cities. It has to get to neighborhoods, right? One in seven kids are sexually abused. Right now, in the research we've conducted, most people in Utah say, when we ask them, is this a problem in your community? What do you think they say? It's not. But if one in seven, what does that tell us? It is in every community. So if it doesn't get eventually to every congregation, every city, every street, every family, some of these things are not going to change. And so that's, we're on a mission to do this, and we're excited. Again, we have about 4,000. Our goal is by next June to have about 10,000. We're going to need to move, you know, move very quickly up, and we have foundational resources, just like two pagers that someone can grab and say, here's some stats, here's some information. Let me go talk to my neighbor about that. And just start spreading. And again, the model is to bring everybody in that's doing anything in each of the spaces and have them talk more and have them strategize more so that we can be, as a society, more effective together. So the overarching goal of A Boulder Way Forward is to make Utah a place where more girls and women and should I say families, can thrive. And our families are struggling right now with a lot of different things. And so we're excited about this. There's not one metric. People ask me this all the time. What one thing would tell you everything's good? There's a lot of different things. But we have now all the spokes have bold goals. We have metrics on how to measure those each year and change, and that's a lot of work. We're still getting other metrics too. And then some tools I just wanted to mention briefly. It's public policy is one avenue, but it will not take care of the whole issue. Messaging, the way we talk, more education. You can look at all these mentoring, the way we talk about things. All of those things need to be pulled together. So we're welcoming everybody in with the Boulder Way Forward. I say, Utah, we have to be better, and we have to do better to ensure that everybody thrives. And again, like I said at the beginning, our vision is not to lift girls and women at the expense of boys and men. In fact, I just was talking to someone earlier today that when I talked to them, they got a little defensive and said, wait, what about our boys and men? I'm like, it's not one or the other. I welcome any professor or anybody that wants to do work on boys and men. I welcome them, and I wish they would, but they are different conversations. We raise our daughters and sons differently, and the impact, like just take social media, the impact on boys and girls are different. And so we need to look at differences in positive ways so that we can change. So I think the abundance mentality is the way that we move forward. We can lift and be lifted. When we strengthen, like I said before, the impact of Utah girls and women and families, we really do strengthen everyone, and that's boys and men as well. And so that's what, I'm looking at my time. I actually have a few more minutes. So is it appropriate to ask if you have questions? Before, I mean, Lisa, I have presented at the League of Cities and Towns and various settings, and some of you have heard me speak at this or that, but we're finally in a place. It's taken a while to build this monster. I shouldn't call it a monster, I think. But to be a force for good, right? And so we're just opening the doors on welcoming in different kinds of partners. And so excited to be able to spend a little time with you folks here at North Salt Lake, because we have some opportunities. Again, if it doesn't get down to the city level and then the family level, we can't make the changes that need to be made, not just for individuals, but for Utah as a whole. I'll tell you, you know, we're not known outside of Utah as a friendly place for girls and women, and that's kind of sad. I get that a lot from people. And I think we have so many good things here in Utah, so many good things, that we just need to tweak what we need to tweak to be in that place. So we welcome North Salt Lake to be, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah.
What I've got, when we get later into the actual work session, I mean the regular session, is a resolution, and we can talk about it then and vote on it if you want to approve it, but it's to make the city of North Salt Lake a Boulder Way Forward city.
Yeah.
And
you'll
we will be the first in the state.
One.
Yeah, we'll be the first in the state to do that. And what I'm hoping, just as your mission, that it will be a grassroots effort that builds naturally, right? It's organic. And that is the beauty of change, is when it comes naturally, it's not forced.
Yeah.
And one thing that I find so fascinating is the process involved that Susan has also been organic. This thing has grown in a way that is very natural and healthy and not pedantic, not, you know, but Susan is really a renowned scholar, and every month she will put out a white paper and also policy briefs. And you can go and you look at the data, the empirical data that shows you on whatever metric what this is. Let's measure this. Is this a problem? Is it not a problem? And it's not only gender wage gap, for example, which is very easy to calculate, and you can, or graduation rates at universities, and that is easily calculated. But they've also done surveys, opinion polls about people think about sexism and women and girls in society and what their role may be in leadership or not.
Yeah.
And that, so it comes at it from both a scientific basis, in my mind, and also a social basis. And that is always the best way, in my mind, to make policy decisions, when you have the data. And this is the newfangled approach that I think is going to... You can say to somebody, I had a hard experience. Well, we all have. Anybody have, male, female, we've all had things in lives that are difficult. But if we can say 1 in 7, you can't argue with the data. And that is more persuasive than anything, to say there are problems that can be solved that are measurable.
Yeah.
And as a city, what we could say is it is our mission to embrace this mission, right? So that women and girls thrive. Now, in our city, North Salt Lake, we have a youth city council mayor who's a female.
Yeah.
We also have, as you can see, Susan, yep. 1, 2, 3, 4 women on our city council. We're one of 3 cities in the state that has 4 women on their city council. Mm-hmm. So it's very unique. It's not that, the difference is not that it's just men and women, because Ted and the mayor are fabulous and we're all equals. Yep. But what it does represent and hasn't been in the past is that we're a half of the population.
Yeah.
And in the bulk of the cities, we're not a half of the people on city councils.
Yeah.
Right. Now, part of that is self-selection. Not everybody wants to be running for public yeah. office and service. But the idea that it's accessible yeah. is what we're trying to show. Yeah. And what I love about what we're doing is it's not only advocacy, but it's education.
Yeah.
It's seeking awareness and then seeking solutions.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not boo-hoo, woe is me, there's nothing we can do. I just saw something on television, I think it was BBC or something, about Malala and a book that's just come out on what's happening in Afghanistan. Now, that is the worst case scenario
yeah.
where women can't even listen to music
yeah.
now. Not only can they not get an education, but they cannot sing. So it's become so oppressive
yeah.
that there'll be backlash, but many people will die as a result. Well, we're the United States of America. That's not going to happen to us, but we're also North Salt Lake, right? It comes all the way down
yeah.
to you and me and how we treat each other.
Yeah.
And we've got a kindness initiative in our city, and I think that's fabulous, but kind of using that template, the whole idea of moving forward in a positive way to change the perspective and to say, we as a community want to embrace positivity
yeah.
in this particular area that needs work.
Yeah.
And Susan, she did a training at UVU 15 years ago, I think. I attended it. It was a training for women. And it was amazing because it evaluated people's personalities, where their strengths and their weaknesses were, and how to become better leaders. And it was data-driven. Right?
Yeah.
And it was very persuasive to all. And the women that were there, and I've seen them, their lives move on, and they've been creative leaders, right? They learn from that. So the idea that we can educate each other and encourage each other, and that women can be kind to women and help women, and there's this, we don't have to be the queen bee. We don't have to be the one in charge and put anybody else down or make fun of. I mean, there is this sexism that is across the board, and part of it is brought by ourselves. We shoot as women ourselves in the foot. So there's a lot of learning to go around. But what I love most about this is that we're building.
Yeah.
We're moving forward. The whole concept is we have a way. Let's all join together and coalesce so that we can move forward on this.
And that really is what it is. It's not starting from scratch. It's bringing all of the people that are excited, the groups, the organizations, including local government, including state government. We're working with many agencies in state government and lots of nonprofits and universities and schools and so forth. So any questions specifically?
Go ahead.
Thank you for being here. I think this is a fantastic organization, and I'm grateful to know about it and be involved. I don't expect you to have concrete or solid recommendations for what a city can do, but I would love if you just brainstormed some of the scope of how you see cities being involved in an initiative like this.
Thank you. So the first thing, and I brought a few of them, we've developed a 2-pager on ways to partner for organizations. I'm not sure this is like the silver bullet for cities. We may need to create one, but I've got a few copies of that. What we're really asking the partners, we're calling them change partners, that are coming in is to think of, at least initially, think of just 3 things that you can do to move things forward in your city. I was thinking about this as I was driving. I live in Bountiful, moved there right at the beginning of the pandemic. And I had never been down this road, so I am enjoying being in your community. But I was thinking about that. Just even simple things to start, like raising awareness, just making sure there's resources out, putting a resource about domestic violence. We have all kinds of videos now and different things in a newsletter, sponsoring a gathering or an event to educate. I don't know, you may have some other ideas as well. Right now we're having county coalitions that are finding their way, but we'll be working down to figuring out how to get cities and different ideas related to that. So I think figuring out ways to just help raise awareness about the individual issues, the health. I mean, why are we 49th of 50 states on women's preventative health care? I mean, that's just wrong, right? So just there's so many issues that we can immediately jump in and figure out how to raise awareness. So, you know, I'm not in local government, so I'm limited in my scope, but I know I get newsletters from Bountiful and hear about resources, connecting with Girl Scout troops or others on, hey, here's some work on, or here's a couple pages on this and that you could talk to your youth about. Those kinds of things, just spreading that awareness, I think is the way to do that. So any ideas, we're just asking for change partners to think of a few things that they can do. I think there's so many opportunities.
Thank you. Any other questions for Susan?
Doctor, thank you. And I just have to thank you. I've heard your presentation a few times.
Oh, okay.
And I just want to thank you for being just such a champion for this.
Thank you.
I mean, it's really tremendous. And I know how much effort you personally put into this. And I just want to thank you for that. I think this is really good. I really like this a lot.
Did you see anything that relates to the city?
A lot.
I guess? Oh, okay.
I think I saw a lot that relates to the city. And I also feel like we could have a conversation about how does this apply, or what you know, where's the opportunities that are maybe ripe for us, and kind of dig through it and have a conversation. I think that makes a lot of sense to do that. And so that's actually one of the two points I wanted to make. And then the other is a question. So there's policy, and then there's communication that penetrates into the broad public. And that's what I'm wondering is do you have a strategy or envision creating a strategy, a broad sort of communications campaign where, you know, you activate the partners that you've got towards getting out targeted strategic messages or something along those lines?
We're going in that direction. We're going in that direction. Right now, we even just have two pagers for each of the 18 spokes, you know, front and back. And on the back, we have stats, but on the back, we have there are three things you can do in year, you know, in year two. Talk to your neighbor, talk to your, you know, do these kinds of things. We have just, can I just say it's emerging? So we are trying to build something that's never been built and trying to empower so many different people. But we have just in the last few months gotten all 29 counties. And so they're laying out the framework, and then that they really haven't gone into the cities. I think we need to do the grassroots. So we have to have the cities coming at the same time and somehow meeting, and then having a targeted, we've been thinking, if you have ideas, let me know. But we've been thinking, it's hard to just say, let's just really push one this month, because it's a year and a half before we get to everyone, right? But that's why partnerships are so important, because, you know, Davis County has the whole health department that is engaged already, and we need to figure out how to get it into the cities and then how to get it into the homes. So I don't have a perfect layout yet, but hopefully, since you've heard me before, I'm a little bit further, maybe. but good questions. We're trying to wrestle with that grassroots and organized and not give too many, because we get pushback. But also, we don't know your citizens like you do, right, to your residents. But have the materials and then recommend strategies, but then the grassroots can, but we're trying to wrestle with how to do that the best way.
One thing I want to mention is that there is also what they call crucial conversations that you have. There's times in your life when you have an opportunity that presents itself and you aren't really armed with the information that you need, but it would have been great had you been. And those crucial conversations can change a person's mind who otherwise wouldn't see something in that perspective.
And our two-pagers have what you need.
How to do that, right? And then in terms of city strategies, I mean, just to say that we are a city that are moving, we're embracing this A Bolder Way Forward, begins, I think, a natural momentum. So that Bountiful will be next, and Woods Cross. And then when we get to the League of Cities and Towns, we build a larger coalition, and before you know it, we have that be one of the arms or somebody that's a leader with that within one of the spokes. Yeah. But what's so great about this is a Children's Justice Center and law enforcement have a lot to bring to the table so that the conversations are crucial and that we are changing minds and hearts to improve everything in terms of women and girls who are not thriving. They are suffering. And what's fascinating to me is 50% of the people when asked is there, when they were told, they were taught, 1 in 7 girls are being abused sexually. And the next question was, do you think this is a problem? And 46% of the respondents said no. Susan, could you believe that data?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Right. So that's where the crucial conversations have to come in. Right? Yeah. We have to teach. Yeah. And then the white papers, the monthly reports that come out, that's all your data. You can go on her webpage and there are how many articles?
Oh, I don't know.
Hundreds.
Yeah. And I write editorials trying to get it out. But one of my favorite things last week, maybe it was yesterday, I'm jet lagged from Asia right now. I walked into this group and sat down at a table of people I didn't know. And they were talking about A Bolder Way Forward. And I was like, yes, I'm not there and it's moving. And so I love it. There are events going on in Emory County and all over. And so there's some momentum and we have to have, I get a little teary-eyed. We have to have hope. Our kids need hope. Women need hope. Men need hope. And I'll tell you, this is bringing hope to families where they say we can, not just by ourselves, but we have a community and our community together can lift and help our children, can help us get, you know, some of those rural counties have such drug issues with girls and boys, and anything for girls, if boys spill in there are gonna help boys too, right? So this is bringing hope to a lot of people, and I think we need that right now for our families.
Susan, I just want to thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I always admire someone that sees the world and has a vision about how it can be different, and then goes, you know, I sit there and go, I wish things were different, and to see someone actually moving the needle forward. I was going to just say we're the second city to get the kindness certificate. So we can be number one here.
You can. And we'd love to, we haven't been proactive on it too much because of bandwidth, but we'd love to do some good social media and really highlight North Salt Lake in this area. And I think it'll prod along.
I wanted to just mention one thing. My observation from going to a couple of graduations of my daughters, but I think I've heard this statistically too, I think women are totally dominating higher education at this point.
Well, we're slightly in Utah, but around the nation, well, that's at the bachelor's degree. We used to not. I mean, it's really changed in the last 15 years. And I tell people, that's awesome. And we need our boys to be graduating too.
No doubt.
We have to. We have the biggest gap in the nation. Nobody's even close, though, in graduate degrees. Okay. So that's an interesting.
I guess my thought was, if that's a measure of success, study that, and how do we duplicate that in these other areas?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I went to my daughter's graduated from optometry school. Huh? 75% of the class was female. Yeah. And, you know, I look at, I've sat up here for a few years, but it wasn't that long ago where every department head was a man. Yeah. And yeah. Now they're mostly women.
There are
women.
Some shifts. Where, yeah. And one of the areas I didn't mention is we do have so many awesome women in Utah, first of all, that don't know how good they are, and second of all, that still don't believe that it's their role to use their voice. And we have to have, when you look at the issues, and you know them in your area, we have to have every man and every woman use their voices. Voice. In ways that can help others. And if we can keep empowering men, right? And unleash men's goodness too. If we can just, you know, even 1,000, 10,000 women to find that their voice matters, they can help get in here and start changing the issues. We just need to. There's a lot. I just had a woman yesterday that again said to me, it's not my role to use, that's my husband's role. And I just said to her, should I say in here? I just said, that's crap, is what I told her. So I don't know if that should be on any official record. So.
Oh, we've said a lot worse in here.
And I just want to go on record saying, the women on this council are not afraid to use their voices.
I love it. And when I've had some women that say, we want all women on the city council, and I'm like, that actually would be a disadvantage, because the benefits come when you have more equal numbers of men and women doing the work that needs to be done. So I love this, and let's not lose the men in here. Thank you for letting me ramble a little bit. It's so good to meet you, and let me know, you know, if you need any other clarification, but I would love to have you be our first formal city. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our next item is our monthly financial report. Heidi?
Well, it's just a little intimidating to get up and present after that, but financial reports are always fun, so this report represents the first 25% of the fiscal year, which would be July through September, so the 25% of the year has elapsed. General fund revenues are at 9.6% collected. Year-to-date revenues are looking really great so far. We're trending upward at 10.2% ahead of last year. Expenses are at 24.6% spent, which is just in line with what we would expect for this time of year. And you can see expenditures are slightly down from last year at 2.2%. Early revenue growth data. So we do have some areas that are leading out and kind of showing some new trends for us. The first that was surprising is sales tax is up 6.5% over last year. You'll remember we ended the year at about a 1.5% decrease over the prior year. It was essentially flat. So this is very limited data that we have. We don't have a huge data set because it's so early in the fiscal year, but it would be nice to see that continue. And that's been very helpful for the city to continue its programs over the last few years. Energy tax is up 20%. And then this is interesting, fines and forfeitures. So our court revenues are up 61%. So I don't have any statistics on that, but I did think it was worth pointing out because we're really back on track with our pre-COVID numbers back from 2020. Other than that, the full financial reports are in the council packets. If there were any questions on any of the information?
The increase in the fines and forfeitures, can you tell us a little bit why that might be happening?
I don't have statistics on that yet to see if we've just had more cases or it has been one specific thing. We do have 3 months of data, but it's not out of the ordinary for us for pre-COVID, so I think we've maybe just returned to those levels. I'll reach out and get some more information from Jody and see if I can just report back to the council on that.
I think it would make sense that we're just back to normal, but comparing it to previous year,
maybe that looks dramatic.
And presumably the 20% increase in energy tax is reflective of the price of gasoline at the pump.
Yes, I wouldn't anticipate it's necessarily usage. We did see that last year because we had the cold winter and usage increasing, but the energy tax, I think, is just the higher cost and the tax related.
I was just going to mention and remind the council that we share court revenue with the city of West Bountiful, and I see those monthly reports. West Bountiful's revenues are up significantly also, and we share 50% of their revenue comes to us because we operate the court on their behalf. So that has something to do with the increase, maybe not all of it, but some of it. And I didn't know if some of you didn't know that.
Yeah. But. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Heidi. Let's take a couple of minutes and just drop down and approve minutes. I saw in the minutes something that was attributed to me, but I had no recollection of saying it. But it sounded reasonably intelligent, so I won't change it. Yeah.
Sounds like something I'd
Any changes? Do I have a motion?
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve the minutes of the October 29th, 2024 and November 6th, 2024 meetings as written.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? No? All right. Let's do my favorite thing, the action items. Any changes there, corrections, additions?
I have one. I didn't look to see. I'm sure it was added on last time, but with our recent underground spring diverting next to the Eagle Ridge Tennis Club, I am still would love to be educated on just the potential consequences. We're making decisions all of the time, and sometimes those consequences or the ramifications may not show up for a decade or years to come, and so I just feel strongly that we need to make sure we're informed and intentional on the way that we are handling our water so that we aren't causing future problems and rather preventing future problems. So I just worry about the aquifer recharge and diverting so much of the water that historically has gone back down out to our drain system. And so I would just love to probably be informed by Karen at some point just on kind of more of the geological ramifications of all of that as we're making these decisions anyway.
So I don't recall if that's on the action item list, but it is on our future council items list.
Perfect.
Oh, number 18. Thank you. So, and we'll plug that in here sooner than later. Yes, number 18, future agenda items.
Is the retaining wall, not our berm, but the retaining wall at the club, Is that at risk at this point?
It is at risk, we believe. And so Karen has done some work on that in the last 10 days, so maybe I'd ask her to give us a report on what's happening and what we're going to be doing in the next few weeks.
So there has been water that's trickling through the front face of that retaining wall for quite some time in limited amounts. I was up there first last summer and then again earlier this summer. The amount of water moving has increased. It's currently coming down through the lower retaining wall that belongs to the tennis club at the second layer down. So the good news is the kind of catastrophic failures that retaining walls can be at risk of are typically caused by either hydrostatic pressure building up behind, the water not being able to get out, or the water being sealed behind, and then from settlement failures below the wall, which destabilizes the structure. Neither of those two things are currently happening. It doesn't mean the wall is not at risk. It means there's no sign of failure or deformation at this time. We found a contractor who would be able to go in and collect the surface water. What's happened in this location is a fairly steep hill, and then they have cut in a retaining wall and steepened it. So the water that normally would have flowed underground is now coming out at a location, there's lots of scientific words, I'm trying to find non-scientific words, where it comes out an abutment and then the water surface flows down below. We were going to install a French drain between the lower wall and the next wall up, where most of the water seems to be surfacing and ponding. And there are tiebacks built between the walls. The construction drawings we have for these walls are not what was built. So the original plans were not, there was a change during construction, which sometimes happens. And the plans that I have are a different wall construction than what's in place. So we were unable to install that drain there at this time. What we're going to do is try and capture as much of the water as we can by running kind of a cutoff ditch and combination French drain directly below the Wild Rose Trail. If you look on an aerial, all of the area directly below Wild Rose above this, where that was steepened to flatten out this large tennis club area, it looks like a jungle, and everything else around it looks like a savanna. And so all of that water, you can clearly see where the water's coming. So along the top of that arc, we're going to install a drain system to get as much of the water collected as possible. The expectation is some unknown percentages at the top. There's phragmites and all kinds of things growing. And then some more will come down lower. If we can get enough of the water collected above to divert the water and help protect the slope from being in these saturated conditions, we'll then be able to go in the spring and potentially add a second drain above the upper wall. The contractor will likely be beginning work next week, pending weather. We'll get the cutoff trench installed, and then we may surface lay the drain pipe, which will be solid until spring when we can dig it in, because it's going to go into the drainage system that's part of the landslide remediation. So probably more explanation than you were looking for, but that's how we're going to fix this problem.
Thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up question about that? When was that wall built? How old is it?
You know, I didn't look at the date on the plans. Do you know, Ken?
I don't know.
Not recent, though.
No, it's not recent.
Quite old.
Okay. Yeah.
It predates the landslide.
This wall was built when it was part of the original construction drawings for the tennis club, both tennis courts, the swimming pool area.
Is there a way, getting back to her question, is there a way that the water that is being diverted, that is being pulled off, that it can be put back into the aquifer?
Yes, and those are one of the things that we're looking at long term. So when Ken and I had discussed kind of this overarching discussion that Councilmember Jackson had requested, we were looking to do a presentation in the spring, and that's definitely part of it. One of our long-term water plans are to prevent water from be diverting into storm drains in areas that won't cause. This is a location where we need to get the water out of the hillside. It doesn't necessarily have to be drained all the way through a storm drain system to the lake, but this is not a location where we want to promote infiltration, because that saturated slope condition, it's just not a safe location.
And one quick just financial and liability question. So the walls are owned and were constructed by the tennis club, both of them. And they are not per the geological and engineering specs that were originally approved.
So our code requirements have changed. And whether or not there was ever a submittal for these walls being built as they are, they were not built as the set of drawings that I found. Our retention policies on building permits are quite short. And so we don't always have construction drawings from buildings from 20 years ago. In this case, I found a set of drawings, but there may have been some other approvals given later. They're not terribly dissimilar. There were some concrete cast-in-place walls, and instead there are some red rock walls, which are the very large interlocking blocks. Mm-hmm. There was no implication that this wall is less secure or stable. And to be honest, the fact that water can move through those modular blocks instead of a solid wall, I actually think it was, in the end, beneficial.
Yeah, but we are paying for the French drains and diversion.
Yeah, so we're the property owner
of that hill
of the hillside where the spring is coming out.
I see.
And even if it's underground, we're still the property owner.
I see.
And without getting too complicated, I think our work on the landslide remediation. This is my opinion, has impacted the springs of that entire hillside area. And so, and we own all that property. So
I
do think the city has a responsibility to fix this if we can.
Thank you.
It was 2005.
Can I say something? Karen, I just wanted to tell you, thank you for using layman's terms because it helps me understand a little bit more clearly, but you always do your homework and it's appreciated, so thank you.
I have a question about a different action item. It's number 31, meeting with UTA about the bus service to Foxborough. It looks like that was rescheduled to October 31st, and I just wonder if there's any update about that.
Yeah, we did, and I sent an update to the council on this one. The mayor and I met with UTA, and bus service will be restored to Foxborough. That's coming up in the spring, early spring of 2025, April. And so that was a good meeting, in fact. Yeah.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you for your work on that. That's been several years we've wanted that. Thank you.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll reconvene shortly.